Good morning, everyone. Welcome to House Call. We are live here on a beautiful Thursday morning from the campus of Idaho State University with another great topic that I'm excited to talk to you all about. Well, I would like to go ahead and welcome our guest, Mr. Jeff Duer. Jeff, you're an epidemiologist with Southeastern Idaho Public Health.
Yes.
Yeah, well, welcome on the show.
All right, thank you.
So tell us about yourself and what you do.
Well, from health department-wise, I deal a lot with the communicable infectious diseases and trying to track, follow up, deal with any outbreaks, things like that.
Uh-huh.
Also identify...
Not the jail outbreaks.
Not necessarily those kind. You know. Yeah, we're not going around looking for those ones. We do spend time in the jails and prisons at times interviewing people, tracking down some of the illnesses with like HIV, syphilis, things like that.
Okay.
And then also education for those guys or gals too.
Yeah. You know, for our listeners, you know, this is actually a very, very interesting field. Going through medical school and afterwards, I did personally a lot of research and learned and have a lot of respect for what you all do because you guys are really the detectives, right? I mean, what most people don't really know. You're just tracking, like we see in those Hollywood movies. You know the ones I'm talking about?
Yep.
Right?
Like,
the virus breaks out and...
Outbreak.
And
I can't remember the name. Contagion, I think, was the newest one.
Yeah. Yep. So... obviously, there's a lot of stuff that goes behind the doors that you all do. Tell us what's happening locally with your...
Well, locally, there's a fair amount of stuff that I don't know if you want to say it is really at the public's attention because it's a lot of the stuff, you know, with public health. When things are working right, you don't even really know we exist in there. It's usually when the outbreak situations hit or these illnesses come out. Or there's something changes in health policy or something, then you kind of hear of public health. From our end right now, our biggest stuff that we're really seeing is with the summertime, we see a lot of the gastro illnesses, gastroenteritis, you know, the diarrheal, nausea, vomiting type of illnesses, and then also a fair amount of some of the vector-borne diseases such as West Nile virus. You know, you hear of the tick bites, other people getting out and traveling, and then you always seem to get those calls from, like with bed bugs or anything like that.
Well, I mean, this is obviously there's a lot in summer that you guys deal with, but I want to start by talking about vector-borne illness. So we are specifically talking about, I mean, most common vector being mosquitoes.
Yep.
Right?
Mosquitoes have probably been responsible for more deaths. You know, one of the most dangerous animals probably on Earth.
Yeah, after human beings, for sure. And recently I read a very interesting article. I definitely want to talk about West Nile and Zika virus and the tick-borne. About the Chagas disease, how it's taking an upsurge in the United States, which is a vector-borne disease, affects the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very enlightening to see how in the United States there's an upsurge of Chagas disease as well. So vectors play a big part. So tell us more about, I mean, and you know, it's interesting that yesterday a patient of mine was telling me about how she's seeing an upsurge of mosquitoes, and more recently that she had not seen before.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll let you take the stab on this. Tell us more about vector-borne diseases in relation to our communities.
Okay. So with vector-borne diseases, they're the ones that can be carried by insects, other animals, other critters in a sense. Mm-hmm. And then they usually will bite us or have some kind of interaction with us for us to be able to pick up these illnesses. Probably one of the classic ones that everybody hears of in our area more for vector-borne diseases is going to be the West Nile virus. Mm-hmm. That's one that in the past, we've gone out, actually have trapped mosquitoes. We still do that. Our abatement districts do. And you actually test those mosquitoes to see if that virus is there and try to put in control measures before it gets to start spilling over into the, or keep them under control before it starts hitting into like the human population. And we look at monitoring with the mosquitoes. We look at horses. In the past, there was what like they called sentinel chicken flocks, things like that. In our area, with the surveillance that goes on, they keep it pretty well under control. Last year, like in our area, we didn't really find any. We didn't have any human cases in here in our area. Idaho didn't have any in general, but across the U.S. there still is. And when Zika virus came in, it really did a big push back into the abatement districts to try to help control those. Some of the other ones that people are really concerned about, and we hear a lot of them, is with such as Lyme disease.
Right.
And that's a tick-borne illness. Mm-hmm. The tricky part with that one is it's really hard to identify in our own area because that particular tick we don't have here in there. And there's a couple other pockets around, you know, like in the East Coast, the Midwest, and then there are some in California and stuff. But who knows, you know, ticks don't know boundaries or anything. And if people travel or with climate change, anything like that, you know, things are changing in there.
You know, it's very interesting how you mentioned with the climate change, a lot of things are changing. I was reading the other day, like the whole mosquito population is changing and we are seeing in the times we never used to see before. Have you guys seen transition locally in these diseases or their pattern happening earlier in areas you didn't expect them to go in?
Yeah, when we first identified West Nile virus in Idaho back in 2000, and, or our big year was in 2006, then we had a big influx then with the illness because it was new in there. But from a mosquito population, it's been really interesting because from the abatement district standpoint, things have changed a little bit to where you're seeing where it's getting tricky is probably having more what we want to kind of refer to as like some of these urban mosquitoes, things like that.
Yeah.
That's going to be your ones like the Culex dorsalis, Culex pipiens. Those are ones that actually are more responsible for like the West Nile virus. They like the storm sewers, the more icky, nasty, organic laden waters in there that might not be as easy to treat. And then in some of these areas too, with it being really warm, you could take, you know, a small little cup, even a cup of water or even a lid off of a pop bottle. And if it's warm, they put their eggs in there. In a few days, you can have a whole cycle coming off of mosquitoes and hatching.
You know, we live in a unique environment. Obviously in Idaho, we love the outdoors. So we're always out there in the woods, you know, running, biking, hiking. We love animals, so we have cattle, we have poultry and chicken and all that stuff. So it kind of can create the perfect storm, right, for these kind of things in our communities. So what do you think of that?
Yeah, and that's one where a lot of us just going to be that taking care of our own selves and trying to do your own prevention efforts instead of having to depend on city, local governments, or anything like that. This is where you can take a really big active part. From a lot of these vector-borne diseases, you know, from the West Nile, some of the tick-borne illnesses, you know, just to keep those mosquitoes, ticks, things like that under control a little bit, you can work on doing, you know, make sure like you don't have any standing water or change it out, in like with your bird bath, change it out every day or every couple days. If you have like tire swings, I mean, here in Southeast Idaho, we're pretty notorious for having all kinds of stuff out in the farm.
We got everything.
And what it does is collects this water, gets stagnant. The mosquitoes go in there, lay their eggs. So if you can like drain that stuff, keep it cleaned up for ticks, those kind of things too, is keep like the shrubbery areas kind of backed off from your yard because they're going to hang out more onto that periphery on the edges in there. And so then your dogs or anything's going to go out in there. And then if you can do any of the medications to try to prevent the heartworm, tick-borne illnesses, or from them biting the dogs, cats, things like that, makes a big difference. From our end, for people, you know, using DEET, insect repellent, you know, according to the label directions, that's going to be a big help right there. And then at certain times of the day, especially for West Nile virus, the mosquitoes that do that biting, that carry that one, they're more active at dusk and dawn. So try to avoid those kind of time periods.
Well, but those are the best times for fly fishing, so we're out there.
That's the worst part, you know, because that's when everyone wants
to. We want the flies to be out, huh?
Yeah, you're out there having a barbecue, people are out playing, because it's not during the heat of the day.
Yeah.
And then one of the other things, too, if you're going to be out there hiking or anything, is wear long sleeve shirt, long sleeve pants, and preferably possibly light-colored ones. So if you see them crawling, you can see them easier than you can on a pair of dark pants.
You know, that's very helpful advice. So especially nowadays with the summer months coming, we got to be more vigilant, right? And like you said, take care of ourselves, our yards, our homes, and don't give a chance to the mosquitoes to breed. We got to do our part. Where can people learn more about these things? I mean, if you go on Google, I mean, you can hear all kind of stuff. I mean, aliens are coming tonight, so.
Oh, there's a ton of stuff out there. Uh-huh. One of the good sources is the CDC or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Right.
And you can just go over to their little search bar, type in West Nile virus, tick-borne illnesses or vector-borne diseases. You know, and that's where you can spend all day reading stuff in there.
And does your website also contain any kind of maps for the local regional area where you can show, okay, these are red areas or red zones and where we have more issues with these?
For some of those, for our local area, Bannock County, go to the Bannock County webpage and do just like the Bannock County Abatement District.
Okay.
And, you know, like if you're having issues with mosquitoes or have questions about them, I mean, the guy that runs it, Dave Herter, is fabulous at helping you out, giving you some hints. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes they even can go, if it's a really bad area, do some trapping and see what's actually there.
Okay. So they can actually come out and trap those bugs and mosquitoes and see what's doing.
See what's there
what
and
the
possibly
risk
even.
Is.
Yes.
Okay.
And we have certain areas around that we know that are higher risk where they've done trapping and stuff in the past.
In Bannock County?
In Bannock County.
Where's that? So I don't go there. Tell me now.
Oh, I mean, like, just you look at some of our recreation areas around, like, Lava Hot Springs, Downey.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you have out there?
Water.
Lots of marshy areas, that kind of stuff. Yeah, those are prime breeding habitats in there. But they do a lot of control on what they call, like, larvaciding, things like that, to help keep that under control.
You're right. I think we just got to educate ourselves and being more vigilant and use insect repellents. I'm not going to ask you too much technical questions about insect repellents, but DEET versus no DEET. I mean, always comes up, right? I mean, what's you guys' take on that?
Yeah, that one. We have to go by what the recommendations are in there. From a historical standpoint, DEET is kind of the gold standard. That's the one that everything's based off of in there. DEET, they've considered it's safe if you follow the directions in there, even for children. I think it was a couple months of age and under, but they don't recommend using it.
6 months.
So then you cover them with a shroud, you know, things like that. But, you know, you're not going to spray it on your face, put it on your hands, put it on from there. The thing with DEET is, we want to have like a minimum of like a 10% concentration up to about a 30% in there. Anything higher than that, it's not going to give you really any extra protection.
Okay.
You know,
got
it. It just, as the higher concentration of DEET goes, it's going to give you a little bit longer time frame in there. So like a 10% DEET solution, it'll be good for probably about an hour, hour and a half of protection.
Okay.
But if you go to like a 24%, kind of like the deep woods off, that kind of stuff, that you're going to probably get about two and a half hours of protection. You start going higher in that, it doesn't really extend it out to like an all day time frame or anything. Because by the time you're sweating, swimming, stuff like that, it's a chemical process. It's going to evaporate. And
yeah, that's a good point, because we never, I mean, at least personally, I've never thought of insect repellent like we think of sunscreen, right? There's a lot of marketing about sunscreen. You got to keep applying. You go in water, you come out, you apply it again, you apply it before. But insect repellent is like, okay, I'm leaving the house, I throw some spray on me, and I'm out, and I leave it back home, and I come back after 5 hours with all those mosquitoes on me, right?
Yep.
So that's a great point. Well, thanks, Jeff. We're going to take a quick break right about here, and we will be back right after the break.
This is KISU-FM Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Rexburg. Also available on your Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
Good morning, folks. Welcome back to House Call. We were having a very intriguing discussion with Jeff. Jeff runs is an epidemiologist at the Southeastern Idaho Department of Public Health.
Mm-hmm.
I always mix the words back and forth. SIPH, Southeast Idaho
Public Health. Yes.
There's no department in there, but it is a department. So, Jeff, we briefly talked about vector-borne diseases like West Nile virus. I mean, luckily we don't have to deal with malaria here, but many parts of the world you do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And some parts of the U.S. do, right?
Yeah, and malaria is one that we still will see every once in a while from people like returning from travel, missionaries, things like that. So it's not necessarily really uncommon for our area. But when you see it, it's like,
oh my God, that's malaria.
Yeah.
You know, I had it when I was living in Pakistan growing up. It's not a fun illness. It brings you down pretty quick.
Yeah. And it's one that the U.S. used to have, too.
Yeah. Oh, we did. So right during the break, we were briefly talking about another thing that we see quite a bit in Idaho is a lot of folks have these pools, swimming pools, or different ponds, or rightly inflatable, these places where they have water. What can you tell us about that? How should people take care of this? Because obviously that could be a big source, right?
Yeah, the swimming pools can be a pretty good source of for some of the West Nile virus, the mosquitoes, you know, more for the mosquitoes and anything like that. Because what happens is the people usually will put these pools in their backyards. Backyards, a lot of them are fairly protected from wind and breeze. And if you have these pools that aren't getting used and the water is really stagnant, really calm, that's a prime habitat for the mosquitoes to live in there. Hmm. So if they have a pump where there's water circulating or go out and you're getting it stirred up, you know, that's a great spot to, you know, help try to alleviate that part. But if the more stagnant it is, that's where it gets really bad. And like if you had a cover on it, it starts to collect some leaves, debris like that, you know, and you get these little puddles sitting on it.
Yeah.
That's a great spot still because it's still protected from the wind. It's usually anything if there's like a little bit of a current, anything that helps break it up, because what those mosquitoes are doing is when they breathe, they're hanging out right at the surface of the water. So any little waves and stuff makes them drop down, then they got to swim and spend all that energy to go back up again.
You know, I've never thought of that, but it makes all the sense. So if you got a pool, water collection, or anything in the backyard, you got to always be a little bit more careful and be aware that this could be a source.
Yeah, clean it up. I mean, I've had our own, like, water buckets at home, you know, where you collect the rainwater, and you leave for a few days, and you come back home, and you look at it, and you're like, oh, time to dump that out, because you can see the larva swimming in it.
Oh, wow.
You know, you hate to waste the rainwater, but it's like, yep, I don't want the mosquitoes around.
Because, you know, I mean, I go mountain biking, and sometimes we go way in back in there in the woods, and I've come across, obviously, people are raising a lot of cattle, and then they have these huge drums of water either collected or whatever, and they've just got water for cattle to drink, but some of them being abandoned, stagnant, and the water is sitting there for God knows how long, right?
Oh, yes. I've gone biking into some of those areas.
Yeah, you
have a pretty good idea where you go, and you go and look at it, and the water, it looks like it's alive because there's stuff swimming all around in it.
There's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah. And so you just want to take a stick and stir it up and try to knock those down a little bit.
So so those are pretty much vector-borne diseases, Zika virus or Zika virus, West Nile, tick-borne we talked about. But we also briefly mentioned during the break about bats. Right?
Yes.
So tell us more about bats.
All right. Bats is our biggest concern in our area for rabies is the bats.
Oh, really?
In there. Yeah. Okay. We're in kind of a unique area, a little different than some of the other parts of the U.S., is we don't have what we consider a terrestrial source of rabies. Hmm. All of our rabies cases, you know, we've seen them in some horses, dogs, you know, mountain lion, things like that. We've always been able to trace them back to a bat strain.
Oh, really? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting because they'll just kind of do the kind of like doing a family tree and trace it back to the bat. So then, you know, like a long time ago, we had a mountain lion that tested positive and it matched back into a bat strain. So we don't see them like, you know, when you think of the old show, was it Old Yeller?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was, where the dog died of rabies and it was bit by, I think it was a raccoon or a skunk, something like that. Those aren't our usual sources. Ours are always tied in with a bat. So if for us, like if you wake up with a bat in your bedroom, you know, like circling around your head or something, we're going to automatically constitute that as an exposure in there.
Oh.
Because they can...
You don't know.
Yeah. Because some of the bites are so small, you're not going to realize if you were bit or not.
So the bat bites are not like those good old vampire movies. They come to your neck and they suck the blood out.
Suck the blood out, yeah.
Oh, okay, so not a lot of drama there. It could be anything.
Yeah, and our bats, you know, one of our more common ones is the little brown bat. You know, the body length on it's probably going to be 2-3 inches. You know, not very big. The wingspan's going to be a little bit bigger and stuff. Those are those ones you see, like, if you go out around the parks at night, you just see them kind of flitting around the lights and stuff. Those are a really common one that we see.
So they can obviously bite your dogs, your pets. So how do you, what are the tricks to be careful?
Okay. So with what we usually will see is somebody, you know, what's really notorious about them is that some of the cats will bring them in, like catch the bat at night or early morning. And it's that morning offering, like here's, you know, here's your morning gift. You know, thanks, and I have breakfast now.
Yeah,
thanks
I
for
got
the bat.
This instead of the newspaper, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
And those are the ones, you know, particularly ones like those are ones we want to get sent in. You know, give us a call at the health department, you know, so we can get those in to send them to Boise to do testing, because that's the only lab in Idaho that does testing for rabies.
Okay.
In there. If, you know, you're going to have any exposures with the bats or be around them, you know, yeah, you don't want to handle them. You don't want to touch them, you know, no bare hand contact. So like a pair of really thick gloves or a shovel, if it's a dead one, you know, that the cat brought in or the dog caught, because we've seen them on both sides, is pick it, you know, no bare hand contact. You can use the plastic bags, glove, a shovel, put it into a container, you know, and then give us a call and we can finish talking to see if there was actually an exposure for us to test.
So the key is for people to reach out to the Idaho Public Health Department and let them know what has happened, and then you guys can take over from there, right?
Yes.
That kind of the key is?
Yep. And animal control is really good at trying to follow up with those two, because we'll get them brought in where somebody will find it in their porch, you know, where the cat brought it in. They don't know what to do with it. They call animal control. They give us a call, bring it in to us.
So let me give out our number. I forgot to do that earlier. It's 282-4555. If you have any questions, if you're holding a bat right now, I think you can even call us and we can direct you in the right direction. So I have another question, because obviously, you know, this goes back to our community and folks. We all enjoy going out. We have beautiful trails from City Creek to, so many out here, Gibson Jack. We also come across, I mean, I know it's not a usual epidemiological issue, but snakes. I mean, what are the, do you want to comment on that?
Oh.
What do we do? I mean.
Actually, pretty funny, because I was just bike riding two mornings ago with my daughters, and coming down, ran across a bull snake, and I you know, let them know, hey, there's a snake.
Yeah.
And as soon as they come down, it starts going across the trail, and they're stopping and going, oh, there's a snake, you know?
So mostly it's just bull snakes, right?
With the bull snakes, gopher snakes, things like that.
So they're not poisonous, but obviously the bite can be
painful. But the bite can be,
painful, right?
Yeah, so the easiest thing is just stop, go around them, you know, anything in there. We do have some other ones that you see once in a while. We've seen them more like a West Fork, Gibson Jack area and stuff, is the rubber boas. They're kind of a little greenish gray brown color one. It's kind of hard to tell which end's which on them, but they're kind of a slow going one. You'll see them anywhere from like 6 inches or
so. They're bigger. Poisonous or no?
They're not poisonous. They're just another one to be aware of. I know some of the areas ran across rattlesnakes, and those are just
that one, you gotta just really
stop,
go a different
keep
trail.
Your distance, walk around it, you know, because usually they're pretty good at giving you a warning.
Oh, yeah. They announce themselves, so unlike us. So, and there's so much out here. I mean, we got attacked by a moose a couple of years ago. I mean, mountain biking. You remember that?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so that's another animal you gotta watch out for.
Yeah, keep your distance on that.
Yeah.
You know, and then I've ran across a badger out there on City Creek, too.
Those are mean.
Those are mean. Just definitely keep your distance. Go the other direction. Just let them be.
Yeah.
In there. You know, every once in a while, you'll run across some coyotes. Same kind of thing. But usually, they're going to be more scared of you than possibly you of them. You know, so they'll kind of check you out, and then away they go. But it's pretty nice in the morning when you're out there and you can hear them yipping and stuff.
You know, we got a few minutes left, but your coyote story leads me to one more thought that lately there, at least in last year, there was a surge of mountain lions that's coming out of nowhere. Not only here, but in Colorado and everywhere. Mm-hmm. What is that rabies causing them to just go crazy at times? So what's going on there?
It's not rabies causing them to go crazy. It's more of us going into their areas.
That makes a lot of sense.
Because people are moving out of the cities, going into these more habitat areas where they live. You look at our area where, you know, like up Gibson Jack, Johnny Creek. Yeah, it's good mountain lion habitat, and that's where they're hanging out. California is kind of the same thing.
Yeah. So in our area, Gibson Jack and these areas really are the real habitat, right? Because, I mean, we saw one up on the ISU Red Hill, too,
Red
right?
Hill. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, well, we got just about 2 minutes left, so I will let you, Jeff, talk about whatever you want to talk about in terms of epidemiology and what you guys do. And you obviously, you guys put in a lot of time and effort to keep us safe. I mean, that's what many people don't realize. A lot of work being done to protect us from a lot of these outbreaks and things that's going on, right?
Yeah, we're kind of that backbone. We're that disease detective. We're the ones sometimes knocking on doors, trying to follow up. So, like, I mean, we'll do stuff where if it's like somebody with HIV, mm-hmm. we'll try to be talking with them, following up with them, trying to get them into care, working on trying to get them into or follow up with their partners, contacts, so we can get them tested, treated
right.
in there. Sometimes we got to sit back, scratch our heads, trying to figure out how some of these diseases are transmitted. Because mm-hmm. sometimes you think of always, you know, that direct contact, airborne contact, some of these things. And sometimes they get messed up a little bit, you know, because we can, with newer testing, we can test certain things like, say, salmonella and find out that it's related to a reptile. But then mm-hmm. on your interviews, your investigations, you're trying to figure out, okay, this one's tied to a reptile, but we're not really getting any source, you know. And then sometimes we go to the house and visit and it's like, oh, so this is how it goes to where these people aren't handling it. But then, you know, just different things come out. So it's putting those puzzle pieces yeah. together.
Well, one last question, because we just got 30 seconds left. So I mean, I read hiking up City Creek, the waters have Giardia,
mm-hmm.
right? So people, obviously, we're not drinking, but the animals are drinking. Is that okay for the animals? Because you're going to stop your dog when it's got a 30-minute hike to...
Yeah, they're going to jump in there and anything like that. With the dogs, it's one of those ones, they can actually get Giardia, stuff like that. And then if they start doing the diarrhea and all that stuff, yeah, follow yeah. up with your vet, you know, because okay. if they're not behaving right. normal.
Okay.
But it's one of those ones, it's just that luck of the draw if they get it or not. But most of them drink the stuff and usually don't see much.
Well, that's awesome. Jeff, we really appreciate you being on the call. And once again, thanks for the Department of Southeastern Idaho Public Health for all the work you all folks do. We're learning so much about you guys, and it's been amazing. So thanks for our listeners. We will be back again in 2 weeks. Thank you.